Fiducian Portfolio Services Rothschild and ANZ. The next speaker, Debbie Blakey. Debbie was appointed to the role of Deputy CEO at HESTA in January 2012. Prior to which, she was Executive Manager, Member Advice from September 2008. Debbie brings more than 20 years' experience in superannuation and financial planning to HESTA. Debbie has previous retail and industry fund experience in business development, operational management and member advice, and is passionate about delivering quality advice to members who have historically not had access to any effective advice. And our last speaker, Andrew Gale. Andrew was Managing Director, Chief Executive Officer of Count Financial Group up until December 2011, and is currently enjoying a short sabbatical. He said he struggled to put his tie on for this session. Andrew has over 30 years' experience in the financial services industry, including leadership of Deloitte actuaries and consultants, and senior executive roles with two of Australia's leading financial services organisations, namely MLC and AMP. Andrew is active in industry and regulatory issues, including recent roles as member of the FSC Advice Board Committee and chair of the Accountant Financial Advisor Coalition. He's also just joined the board of SPAR, which is the self-managed super fund group. So I'll hand over to Paul Barrett. So please welcome Paul Barrett. Thank you.
Thank you and good morning, everybody. Isn't the bloke on the sabbatical looking healthy? I'm very jealous. It's great to be here at the Institute of Actuaries Conference. It's my first time here, actually. And so I've written for the first time a speech with numbers in it. I do have some numbers, and when it comes to question time, I encourage you to try and take those numbers apart. It'll be a good test, so I look forward to that discussion. Now, I might say to begin with that despite the obvious competitive tension that exists from time to time between the sectors represented here in this session before you, there is something we all have in common, and that is we have to coexist to ensure certain matters of the national interest are solved. Issues like the retirement savings gap, issues like underinsurance, and issues like longevity. These are the issues that our clients have in common, and these are the issues, frankly, that regulators should have at the top of their priority lists. Now, unfortunately, recent reform has not necessarily helped us in solving some of those issues. And whilst that's not the topic today, when it comes to question time, I'm more than happy to elaborate. In any case, my job this morning is to talk to you about banks. I've been asked specifically to talk to you about the bank model facing the future in terms of selling and advising. So to that end, we'll get into it. Now, I started preparing some notes for this by thinking about my relationship with my bank, and I actually have two banks. I thought about my relationship with my two banks, and I considered the interaction that I'd been having with those institutions of late. In the last week, in fact, I have bought one skateboard online using the services provided by my bank to do so, a lounge sofa for a house that my wife is building, the complete history of the complete musical history of Led Zeppelin. And I've bought a guitar application. I've also transferred $85 to my rugby team. I've just started playing rugby again and actually played the first game for 23 years on the weekend, which is why I've got a slightly crooked back. But I transferred $85 to the team. I set up a direct debit. I used ANZ's Go Money application on my iPad. So I'm an engaged client of my bank. In fact, I'd say the bank is the centre of my financial life. Now, should my bank attract the right kind of professional, apply the right kind of training, develop the right style of incentive systems, ensure its computer systems are right, then it should be in a position to assist me with matters of a far more grand nature than buying skateboards. The reality is the bank should be able to help me realise my financial ambitions. It should be able to advise me on things like debt, on things like budgeting, on things like achieving my financial goals. It should help me to take responsibility for my financial future. Now, for banks to do this, there are a couple of significant challenges in front of them. The first one that I want to talk to you about is about moving banking customers from transactional in nature to more long-term and sustainable in terms of the ongoing relationship they forge with their banks. Now, online banking, as I've already highlighted, has been a very effective solution to right here, right now, transactional type of issues, you know, convenience, you know, transferring funds, etc., etc. But a substantial shift is required, I think, for consumers to deem their bank a source of knowledge and understanding for their financial situation as a whole, or a source to help them optimise their financial situation and their financial future. So more on that later. I'll come back to this issue of transactional versus ongoing. The second issue, the second challenge that banks face, and not just banks actually, but any advice provider face, and frankly I think this is the key challenge behind FOFA and behind a whole bunch of other things, including even my super, is what I call the great advice value dilemma. The great advice value dilemma is simply this. It costs about $3,500 to provide holistic advice. The average consumer is prepared to pay about $300 for that advice. So there is a gap. The great advice value dilemma. There are two ways to close the gap. The first way is to improve the value of advice and the perception of advice that consumers have and ask them to pay more. So you raise the price they're prepared to pay. That is a long-term strategy and one we are far, far behind in my view. The second is you find a system of subsidisation to close the gap. Subsidies like advisors charging that much for upfront advice and subsidising it by entering into ongoing fee arrangements with their clients. Subsidies like rebate systems. Subsidies like commissions. Subsidies like payments from manufacturers to advice givers in any form. Subsidies like ownership or vertical integration. So you can see why our industry has evolved the way it has. The attempts to solve the great advice value dilemma have landed us in the position we are in. Interestingly, and as an aside, FOFA, of course, is attacking all of those subsidies, bar one. The one it's not attacking is the ownership issue, which is why I suspect the large vertically integrated players should do quite well out of reform compared to the middle-sized players who are not institutionally owned. Now, on this great advice value dilemma, it was a speaker at this conference a couple of years ago, Richard Cornwell, actually explained that even after getting advice and implementing a plan, the value of that plan can only be compared to some hypothetical alternative course of action. So he sums up exactly the issue we face when describing and trying to sell advice, which is an intangible future product. It doesn't have the instantaneous gratification that consumers want in many of their purchases, such as skateboards today. Now, the bank's solution, broadly speaking, to the great advice value dilemma is to package advice with implementation, is to package advice with product. Advisors employed by the bank must be able to deliver tailored advice effectively and efficiently, and our structure, and all of the banks are in this position, reflects that proposition and is designed to enable the provision and implementation of quality advice. The two things go hand in hand. Now, it's important at this stage to outline what we are attempting to deliver and what we believe are quality or elements of quality advice. Now, it's our view that returns and tax savings, whilst valuable, are not and should not be the key things that you attempt to deliver to meet quality financial advice, or the definition of quality financial advice, because these things do not necessarily give consumers confidence in their financial futures. We need to think about developing better habits, budgeting habits, paying off debt, good savings habits, these sorts of things. We need to inform and educate and empower the owners of capital, as opposed to just trying to generate returns and transactions. If you think about the current test in the industry for good advice, it turns on interpretation of documentation. It's a disclosure-related test. You think about the way audit teams audit advice. They look at whether or not rules have been met, whether or not you've disclosed the right fees in the right way. We do not actually have a test of comprehension or understanding. So banks are ideally positioned to spend some capital on this, train their people and ensure that the advice process delivers understanding, not just information. Furthermore, the products that we use must enable us and support the efficient implementation of advice. And it is our view that products play that role. Products essentially play the role of execution of good strategic advice. Now, banks have understood that not all of their clients walk into bank branches anymore. So the traditional model of waiting for clients to walk in the branches and having some kind of referral to a financial planner, that model's under threat as more and more consumers elect to go online and deal with their bank in other ways. So to that end, and I know we are not alone in this, in terms of developing the advice and sales process, we are looking to video conferencing, phone-based advice and online. This is the new revolution, if you like, when it comes to the way the advice model will be delivered via banks. Now, if you're a worker today in Broome, Port Hedland, Esperance, Carnarvon or Newman, you can access a professional financial planner with the ANZ Group via a video conference in your local community. And that will grow. In fact, there are 40 advisors qualified and trained in Melbourne and in Sydney on telephones delivering phone-based advice as well as video conferencing as well. And if you're a truck driver like Mark, who was a recent client of our phone-based advice model, you can literally drive your truck from Brisbane to Perth and whilst crossing the Nullarbor, update your life insurance, hands-free, of course, I assume. True story. That's a true story, and I could give you countless examples of stories like that. Now, here are the numbers. The customer feedback when it comes to the new way of engaging clients is as follows. 25% of respondents to surveys we put out, after-sales surveys, rate the service 10 out of 10. 79% agreed that ANZ would be their first port of call for future financial advice transactions, no matter what they would be, as a result of receiving the service that they got online. Convenience, confidence and efficiency of the proposition resonate very, very strongly with consumers. Now, of course, there still are some people who walk into bank branches. So, you know, the branches are still full with traffic. People haven't deserted them entirely just yet. So we need to think about how we position our bank branches. Now, the reality is when we go back to that issue of the public interest, things like underinsurance, etc., we've got 800 bank branches in every nook and cranny, regional and urban Australia. There are probably 5,000 bank branches across the whole bank network. We are ideally positioned to provide accessible and affordable advice and to have general advice conversations in branch like this one. A client walks in wanting to put money in a term deposit. The teller has a conversation about the tax effectiveness of putting a term deposit in superannuation versus outside of superannuation. These are examples of the sort of general advice that can be given through 800 ANZ bank branches, not to mention the other 4,000 or 5,000 bank branches around Australia. What I worry about is that the current set of reforms that are before us will prevent us from realising that opportunity. As it stands today, FOFA says we cannot incentivise our front line effectively to have those conversations. These are the sorts of policy decisions that we need to seriously consider and debate. Now, the result of our current structure, the result of our current approach, has been a great thing for affluent pre-retirees. If you think about the market that bank-based financial planning, and for that matter, probably the IFA world as well, has been very successful in dealing with, it's the pre-retiree affluent person. I keep hearing the stat about I think it's something like 20% of Australians have a financial advisor. Well, when you look at people aged between 50 and 64, and this is a Roy Morgan number, 50 and 64, the number's 60%. So 60% of Australians between 50 and 64, according to Roy Morgan, have a financial planner or have had a financial planner. Now, in the longer term, the capacity of our current model, which dispenses holistic advice to the broader subset of Australians, is going to be challenged. Because which group has the highest ownership of superannuation today? Which generation? Generation X. Generation X are the largest owner of superannuation assets. Will they want to engage in the same way pre-retirees do, the affluent pre-retirees? I'm a Generation Xer, and I'm not sure I would want to engage in the same way that perhaps my parents would want to engage. So we need to think about changing the holistic model and the way we deliver advice to attract what is now a very large up-and-coming market for superannuation in this country. So rather than hold our current model and coerce Generation X's into that, we need to adapt. So the most effective medium to do this, of course, is online. The next generation of consumers will want to purchase financial planning advice online. Now, these services cannot be an extension of the existing model. We have to think about our model for providing online advice in a completely new way. Now, online banking, as I've already said, has been very effective in terms of enabling consumers to do transactional stuff, switching funds, etc. But it has not been an effective way to empower consumers and give them knowledge and know-how. A significant strength of the traditional model is the high level of engagement that you can achieve in a face-to-face holistic approach. The challenge for us is, how do we create the same level of engagement with Generation X online? And I'm going to share a little personal anecdote with you before I hand over to our next speaker. Who in the room is learning the guitar at the moment? Is anyone learning the guitar? We've got one, two people, three people? Right. Well, I'm learning the guitar too. And so if you haven't got anything out of what I've said up until now, at least three people in the room, I'm going to give you a hot tip. I started learning the guitar a year ago. And on the weekend, I played my first gig in a band and can now play around 200 songs, and I own 10 guitars. I am obsessive. And my relationship with my wife is a little bit, there's a bit of tension at the moment. It's fair to say. After all, she is building a house. It's not appropriate to buy 10 guitars when you're building a house. But the point of my story is this. I Googled online guitar lessons a year ago. I have no musical background, none whatsoever. I Googled online guitar lessons. And I formed over the following 3 months a relationship with a guy called Justin Guitar. He's a Tasmanian living in London. I didn't pay him a dollar. I logged onto his website. He gave me online video tutelage for free. I did his beginner's course. I've now done his intermediate course. And I can actually play the guitar in a year. I have yet to have one lesson with a real human being face to face. I am totally engaged with this person. He has chemistry. He has a great service. It is free. Okay, so there's obviously a flaw in this business model, right? The reality is he is the most influential guitar teacher in the world. He has tens of millions of students. He has never met most of them. He is able to connect with you every single day, sometimes many times a day, sometimes late into the night. I love Justin. He has become a true companion. And I've never met him. And I've looked at the online financial websites of the other banks. I've looked at the online financial websites of our competitors. And they're good. But I haven't found Justin in any of those websites. I've yet to find the model that truly creates the chemistry and creates the want and the desire to log on and have a financial conversation. And I think in that, somewhere, in justinguitar.com, for those three of you, you can write that one down, somewhere in there lies the answer about where we are headed in terms of the future advice model and as a way to empower consumers. And guys and girls, it ain't about selling product. It is about giving education and informing consumers. How does he make his money? Well, I love him so much. I've bought his books, his DVDs. I spruik him to everybody, and he advertises online. Thank you.
Now, Paul obviously spoke the banking perspective, and my mandate today is to speak about delivering advice from an industry fund perspective. And obviously the presentation will be quite HESTA specific, and I need to start with a general advice warning because there are some slides that actually could be thought of as advice. So please, everyone, be aware, general in nature, nothing personal. Starting out, who is HESTA? Some of you may have come across us. We're one of the large industry funds. We operate specifically in the health and community services sector, and we've actually maintained that focus. Some industry funds that started out in specific industries have actually gone on to become multi-sector funds and operate across all Australia in all industries. We don't. We are a national fund, but we actually focus on health and community services, and we will continue to do that. Of course, we have a lot of members and employers outside of that sector, and we never say no to a new member or a new employer, but it's not the focus of our education and advice services. We are a low-fee fund and, of course, no commissions. And I do just want to pause there and say, I think the critical difference with an industry fund is simply the distribution model. Traditional retail super, the distribution model very much involves financial planners and dealer groups. And an industry fund, we actually don't have that distribution model. So our model is through employers. And that's how members make contact with the fund. And that becomes very important when you start talking about advice, because there is no financial planner attached to that member. The average HESTA member, female to start with, over 80% of our members are female, and that's obviously just the nature of the industry we cover, a lot of nurses, a lot of childcare workers. That's a real issue because you'd all be aware that the retirement balances of females are significantly lower. At retirement, currently about half the balance of their male counterparts. And that's going to be an ongoing issue because we see our members very much impacted by broken service and by part-time work. In terms of account balances, people are often quite shocked, actually, to hear what the median account balance is. Now, I need to stress that's median, it's not average. The average is about 25,000. But if you think of the median being just above 10,000, that means we have a huge number of low account balance members in the fund. And we never lose sight of the fact that we need to have a product that is designed with those members in mind. We have a very strong default offering, both in terms of investments, in terms of insurance. I'm not going to speak about that today. I'm speaking about advice, but it is a big focus of ours. Within that membership, though, we have this other membership. And this is obviously where the advice and education efforts focus. This is a growing group for us. Already over 60,000 members in the over 50 age group with more than $50,000. Now, that's a huge number of members. If you think of the challenge of actually delivering advice to those members, it's absolutely huge. And that's really what we're trying to do in the various ways that we deliver advice. And that would be very much the same, I think, for a lot of industry funds. And that number grows every year. Every year that we do our analysis across the funds, that we slice and dice across the fund and see exactly where everyone sits, this number is growing at quite an amazing rate. We talk to members. I think everyone who's been up here this morning has spoken a lot about the consumer aspect. And all of us do research and speak to our members. Paul's just spoken about his experience as a consumer of bank products. And the feedback from members in our fund is actually pretty consistent. And basically, they think that super is very complex and very difficult. Now, that, to be honest, is quite a frustrating starting point, because an accumulation-style fund is actually very simple. And anyone who can understand a basic transactional banking account can actually understand super. But that's not the member perspective. So we have to start off by saying that they do think it's extremely complex, and the first thing we need to do is demystify it and actually remove this mysterious element of super. The other thing is that what they're looking for is help. They don't come to HESTA and say, I'm looking for single issue advice on my investment options in retirement. They actually just come looking for help. It might be as simple as help completing an application form. It might be a very comprehensive advice piece covering a complex estate planning situation. The variation is huge, but what they're basically looking for is help. And then, of course, we have the little issue that they don't really want to pay for it. And that's a challenge for all of us. Paul spoke about the challenge as he sees it, and certainly for us it is a challenge. And because of that, I think we see the solution going forward very much in single-issue advice, because we can structure that where some of it is delivered without an extra cost and some of it that needs to be paid for is delivered with an extra cost. But the bottom line is for many members that if they're faced with these challenges, they end up doing nothing. And we wanting to engage with them. That is a huge driver for us, is that we know that good advice at certain times in a person's life can give them an incredibly good outcome. And that's our passion. So when I speak about HESTA advice, I really need to start on the education side, because education and advice is very much interwoven. And I actually think that's the same for any good advisor. I think anybody giving good advice has an element of education in that. And we certainly see that spectrum. So I spoke about our distribution model being through employers, and we very much, the education is very much the same. And we deliver education in workplaces. We have a national team of about 40 field staff based in every state and territory, and we go out to employer work sites and we actually deliver little components of education. These are incredible for members, because it's a totally non-threatening environment where they can come in a small group with work colleagues. So, you know, there might be four of them, there might be 20 of them, sometimes there might be 100 or 150. But they can attend an education session and just have these little seeds planted. Out of that comes our advice. And again, a huge spectrum of advice, starting with general advice and right through the spectrum to very complex personal advice. Now, that is delivered, the general advice is actually delivered across the fund. It's delivered through phone advice, and Paul spoke about their experiences with phone advice. We are seeing an incredible demand. Members just want to have good general advice conversations on the phone, and that's a really growing area for us. It happens in workplaces, and obviously it happens through our web. But what I want to speak a little bit more about is the personal advice service. And I'm not going to focus on the holistic advice, because I think everybody in the room knows what that covers and understands that. What I want to speak a little bit about is the single issue advice. Now, everyone who's done research, this is a really interesting thing, that no matter which fund people are members of, the demand is very much the same. And ASIC has done research on this that actually had the same outcome. Members are looking for advice in little pieces. They want single issues identified and dealt with. And this is becoming a huge focus of our advice. Now, the first three elements that are detailed there are actually very simple, because we can deal with them as part of the member's admin fee, and we can actually deal with them as part of the class order relief. Now, I'm not going to talk about that. Anybody in the room would know that that's quite contentious, because the relief was only given to Superfund trustees and not to other dealer groups. But what is really interesting is that's not the only way that you can deliver single-issue advice. And the bottom three elements there are actually things that we deliver under the normal parameters of advice. So Section 945A that talks about having a reasonable basis for advice, that's the parameter under which that advice is given. But it's scaled advice. It's limited down to the single issue. Has anybody in the room read RG200? A few people. I just see heads. I don't see hands. I don't think anyone's that keen to admit they actually have. Look, it's really, that is something that is well worth reading. And don't read the beginning part that deals with the class order relief. That's, you know, really a regulatory guide and what you would expect. But the second half of it actually deals with how to give advice under Section 945A, so the normal scaled advice, and is actually really, really interesting, and I think has given financial service providers like ourselves the confidence to actually move into the space and give this type of advice. There are two items there marked with an asterisk at the bottom, so transition to retirement and income stream, and those are the only two items that members actually pay a distinct fee for. The rest of our advice is actually provided as part of their normal account fee. But those two items, because they are for a very specific demographic, we actually do charge a fee, and the fee is $495, which is pretty low when you think of the sort of fees you can pay for advice. But really, on a single-issue advice, we find members are quite comfortable paying that fee. Now, moving on, I just wanted to speak a little bit about some of our messaging. And a very strong element of the messaging that we give to members is around adequacy. Something that is very interesting is members have two types of goals. They have journey goals and they have outcome goals. And members very often want to focus on the journey goals. They want to focus on, you know, what can I salary sacrifice right now? What insurance can I deal with right now? What should my investment strategy be right now? But we need to be having conversations with them about the outcome and about the adequacy. And we've done a lot of work in this over the last 3 years, and this is actually amazing to see how members are liberated as they get to understand these outcome issues. The first thing is members obviously have never heard about the ASFA retirement standard. So just going through that with them and explaining the modest and the comfortable lifestyle is very illuminating for them, because they're all asking questions about what sort of retirement they might have. But there's a lot of fear. And I think what Todd shared yesterday, you know, fear drives behaviour. And when members are fearful of what they might face in retirement, it actually switches them off and they rather don't deal with it. And of course, when they read articles or they hear in the media that you need $1 million to retire, that doesn't help at all. Because a nurse earning $43,000 a year, if she hears that, her solution is, okay, well, I won't bother. I'll just rely on the age pension and I won't do anything. And that's actually not a good outcome. So we do work taking members through the ASFA retirement standard and actually speaking to them about the age pension and how the age pension will go towards meeting that. Now, the fantastic news, and you'd all be aware of this, is that the difference on a modest income, be it for a single or for a couple, is actually very small. It's a few thousand dollars a year. It's not huge. And it's very attainable for every member to actually end up with that sort of outcome. So we've projected capital required at retirement. We actually did this a few years ago using our own tools. When the Money Smart website was launched and you know, all of those calculators that were developed, I believe, by somebody in the room, we actually decided to use that because I think it's very powerful to say to consumers that this is not a HESTA tool. This is a generically available tool that they can actually go online and play with. And again, if you haven't looked at the Money Smart calculators, I really would encourage you to do that. So the sort of capital that we're talking about, as you can see, for a modest member, it is extremely attainable. And that's the thing that we love about this story, is that members understand that there's a variation in outcomes, and they'll probably end up somewhere between modest and comfortable. And where they are on that spectrum is actually the result of the decisions that they will make. Now, sort of coming into the close, I thought I would just speak about the key messages. And really, the main key message we always want to give is keeping it simple. I think we talked a little bit this morning about the complexity of financial services and how our natural tendency when we work in the industry is to make it more complex. And it's very important to try and simplify that and to put ourselves back in the shoes of the consumer and say, how can we keep it simple? The other thing is that I think it's very important to have the same message delivered through multiple channels. That might sound easier to do than it actually is. You know, often the different channels might have different people behind them, and it's very important to actually bring consistency in the messaging. And an example of that would be that super is a long-term investment. We've worked really hard in whatever channel, be it face-to-face advice, be it our website, be it other written material, PDS, to actually have that same messaging throughout, that super is a long-term investment, and to encourage members to see it with that light. We do segment statements, and we do run various campaigns, and we've worked a lot in the last few years to try and do that coupled with advice, and I think that's been very successful for us. Members don't want multiple messages, and something we need to do better is actually identifying what the one key message each member of the fund deserves to hear. Now, I thought I would give an example of this. In one of the breakout sessions yesterday, there was mention of how difficult it is to take complex situations and communicate them to members. And there was an example of stochastic modelling and the probabilities of various outcomes and a discussion of how on earth do you actually communicate that to members so that they understand it. And I thought I would give this example of life expectancy. Now, if we start talking to members in very technical terms about longevity, you know, you see the eyes glaze over and it really doesn't mean a lot to them. So we've tried to devise ways that we can actually speak to them about that in a way that they understand. And this is one of the ways we've done that, courtesy of some slides from PIMCO. Basically, we speak to members about a group of 10 65-year-olds, and we take them through a discussion of looking at the life expectancy of that group. And we speak to them about the normal distribution and, you know, the likely outcomes in terms of averages. But we also speak to them about the likely outcomes in terms of the variation. And we end up this slide, and it is amazing when you deliver this to members and you go through the story. At this point, you see the lights go on because they actually get it. They get that average life expectancy is certainly something they need to be aware of, but that the variation is critical. And their planning actually needs to cater for the 69-year-old who might die, and it needs to cater for the 99-year-old. So that's just an example of the messaging. I thought I would finish by just saying, where do we see it going? And I think Paul covered some of this. The future very much is about online advice, and everything that Paul said, I totally agree with. We haven't got Justin Guitar yet, and we certainly, I think we're all working very hard to develop that. The other issue that I think is very critical is that it needs to integrate with administration. For too long, advice has been something that's plugged on the side. And members actually need a very holistic experience. They come to us looking for help, and when we give them outcomes, it needs to integrate fully in their administration experience. And the last thing is, I think, to be very mindful is that there's not one solution for all members. And we are getting better at segmenting the different groups of members. Some members might not be looking for an online solution, and you will always have some members who want a face-to-face experience. So it's very important to segment very well. Thank you.